Humans and animals have been living together for thousands of years. How do these interactions benefit our health? This is the People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
Dogs have an amazing sense of smell. During the pandemic, some airports in Europe used dogs to screen passengers with COVID. In some healthcare settings, dogs detect bladder cancer, lung cancer, or C. diff infections.
Service dogs can alert people to episodes of low blood sugar or an impending epileptic seizure. They can also help calm people having a panic attack.
How do animals improve your life? Our lines are open for your stories.
Coming up on the People's Pharmacy, the healing power of pets.
In the People's Pharmacy health headlines, flu season usually fades by mid-March, but this year, influenza is on an upswing. We should have been prepared, since a similar pattern occurred in Australia in 2023. Our summer is their winter, and last year their flu season lasted 6 months instead of the usual three. If we follow the same pattern, we might expect the flu season to finish here around the end of April. At this time, different parts of the country have very different rates of infection, with the West Coast and the Northeast doing relatively well. Many states in the Midwest, especially Ohio, Nebraska, Michigan, and North Dakota, still report high levels of influenza-like illness. The CDC reports that a higher percent of flu tests were positive last week for both A and B influenza. The agency reminds patients that prescription antiviral drugs can shorten the duration of flu illness, especially if they're started as soon as symptoms begin.
Most pediatricians thought that we had gotten measles under control. Childhood vaccinations virtually eliminated this highly contagious viral infection, but vaccination reluctance may be contributing to a resurgence around the country. The CDC reports 60 confirmed cases so far this year, which is more than all of 2023. At last count, 17 states are reporting outbreaks, including Arizona, California, Florida, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, and New Jersey. Other parts of the world are also experiencing large measles outbreaks. Europe and Western Asia have been especially hard hit. Measles causes much more than fever and rash. When children are vulnerable, this viral infection can make them very sick.
A new report in JAMA describes findings from a small study of people with anomalous health incidents, or AHIs. That's a euphemism for a mysterious set of symptoms known as Havana syndrome. People working at the U.S. Embassy in Cuba were among the first to report an abrupt onset of noise inside the head, clicking, buzzing, or screeching. Some people also reported a sensation of pressure in one ear or on one side of the face. Other symptoms included headache, nausea, vertigo, balance problems, tinnitus, sleep problems, and cognitive dysfunction. NIH researchers investigated 81 people who had experienced this problem. They were compared to 48 healthy control participants. The investigators relied primarily on quantitative magnetic resonance imaging of the brain to detect pathology. There were no significant differences between the two groups. An editorial in the same issue of JAMA points out that the failure to find significant differences in MRIs should not be interpreted as evidence that nothing has happened to these individuals. We know very little about the effects of electromagnetic energy on the brain, so it's difficult to tell whether suspected bursts of pulsed radio frequency might be responsible. That's one hypothesis. The editorial also notes that uncertainty can lead physicians to overlook patients' complaints. It says, the unfortunate tendency to dismiss disorders such as chronic fatigue syndrome and long COVID as of psychological origin illustrate this difficulty.
For years, older women were urged to take lots of supplemental calcium, preferably accompanied by vitamin D. Physicians believe this combo would help counteract osteoporosis and prevent fractures. Part of the Women's Health Initiative was a placebo-controlled trial of calcium and vitamin D in more than 36,000 postmenopausal women. The results of 20 years of follow-up after the trial have just been published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. There was no apparent reduction in hip fracture. There was a modest reduction in death from cancer, which was offset by a modest increase in death from cardiovascular disease. The net effect was no change in all-cause mortality.
Psyllium fiber supplements are a popular source of soluble fiber. They help maintain regularity and can also reduce cholesterol. ConsumerLab.com tests dietary supplements and has found several brands of psyllium fiber are contaminated with excess lead. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon. I'm a medical anthropologist.
And I'm Joe Graydon. I'm a pharmacologist. Today, our lines are open for your calls and questions. We are talking about the healing power of pets.
Here in the studio, we have two professionals standing by for your questions, comments, and stories. Dr. Chuck Miller is the owner of Triangle Veterinary Hospital in Durham, North Carolina. He's been taking care of companion animals in this area for more than 30 years. Full disclosure, he's been our veterinarian for decades. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Miller.
Thank you, Terry, Joe.
Also in our studio, we welcome Kevlyn Swepston. She is a registered veterinary technician who coordinates oncology volunteer services and pets at Duke University. In that capacity, she serves as the primary contact for pet therapy at Duke Health and evaluates therapy dog teams. These teams provide patients with vital companionship and emotional support. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Kevlyn.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Our phone lines are open for your stories and comments. The number is 888-472-3366. Has a pet made a difference in your health or that of someone you know? You can also email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com, or find us on Facebook at People's Pharmacy, 888-472-3366.
Last week, we were charmed to listen to Scott Simon's monologue on Weekend Edition Saturday. He described his family's experience with pets. Thanks to Scott and NPR, we're sharing it with you now.
As my wife puts it, animals have overtaken our lives. I was on the air last week when Daisy, our French poodle, devoured a bittersweet chocolate bar. We hide chocolate from her. It can be dangerous for dogs, but Daisy is the Hercule Poirot of concealed sweets. An empty wrapper in her paw pads told the tale. Our family rushed Daisy to a veterinary clinic where... well, I'll spare you the details. Daisy is fine now. Our hearts are just restarting. We're also caring for a huge white foster cat we've dubbed Gato Blanco. He claws furniture on his hind legs like Catzilla tearing down a Tokyo bridge. Every chair in our apartment is now covered with sheets, towels, or plastic wrap. We keep a window open, no matter the weather, because one of our daughters is allergic to cats, but she wants to keep Gato close, even as he swats photos, flowers, pens, and my microphone off tables with a smart forehand. Our feline lodger also climbed onto a planter outside our apartment and strolled over to the other side of the building, 7 floors up. Is that Spider-Man? No, it's Gato. Our other daughter has made her bedroom into a kind of Roman Colosseum for Bagel, the miniature hamster, who has a race course and an exercise wheel. I hear Bagel scurry inside her wheel so furiously, I'm pretty sure she's training for this summer's Hamster Olympics in Paris. Daisy the dog sits beneath our dinner table, quivering and blinking, her large, dewy eyes that play on our heartstrings like a Puccini aria. Some of us may let a few stray morsels fall her way from time to time. We can't let her get too excited, though, because she has a tendency to... well, more details to spare. We keep towels handy for such episodes of excitement. Gato Blanco, meanwhile, leaps onto our table, but not to eat, just to hang with the cool kids, our daughters.
Hey, how was your day? I imagine him saying, we're going to watch something after dinner?
Our family may gripe as we sneeze, mop, and search the floor for our missing pens, but we also hold our animals close as they help us laugh, marvel, and care for them and for each other. Our lives have been overtaken by our animals, and we're having a troublesome and wonderful time.
That was Scott Simon, the famous voice of Weekend Edition Saturday on NPR. And thanks to Scott and NPR for giving us permission to replay that.
Our lines are open for your comments about how animals may have overtaken your life. 888-472-3366. And you can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. That number again, 888-472-3366.
And we go to Tampa, Florida to talk with Rick. Rick, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to get your guest comment with reference to something that I experienced in the late 80s. I developed a neurobehavioral treatment unit as well as assumed responsibilities for directing an adolescent pediatric post-acute traumatic brain injury rehabilitation program. So I was doing research as well as trying to develop effective approaches to treat these individuals. One of the things I was initially skeptical about was the use of animals. At this particular rehabilitation program in New Hampshire, they had barn animals, horses and cows, I think, and sheep and all kinds of things. And they would have post-acute traumatic brain injury to adults as well as children dealing or interacting with these animals. And I thought, what the heck they got these animals for? However, what I came to find was that these people with post-acute traumatic brain injuries who could be quite explosive in their behaviors and have real difficulties interacting and dealing with people, that when it came to like brushing a horse or feeding some animals or something, that there was a rewarding kind of experience for them. And in short, it seemed to help begin to facilitate the healing process with these individuals. And we had some really good outcomes in these programs. And so I just thought I would call in and kind of share how animals can be kind of a therapeutic process for people with post-acute traumatic brain injuries, especially in the initial stages.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for that call.
And Kevlin, would you comment on that, please?
Absolutely. So, Rick, thank you for giving us the example. And you're absolutely right. We see animals heal in multiple different ways all the time, and their benefits, cognitive, neurological benefits, even emotional benefits, are definitely out there. And definitely, you know, sometimes people can, they can't say it out loud, but they can sit there with the dog, they can sit there with an animal, and they can just let it out. They either with words, with energy. It's just a different way of communicating, and it's powerful.
Well, I think what is, I suspect, surprising to some people is the idea that it's not just dogs.
Correct.
It can be horses.
Absolutely. And Joe and I witnessed horses that are used in therapy programs when we visited with Dr. Alan Hamilton in Tucson, Arizona.
A neurosurgeon who has an amazing program demonstrating that interacting with horses can be very healing.
And Kevlin, I saw you'd like to respond to that too.
Yeah, I mean, we have actually, there's a study, they actually call it now animal-assisted interventions because it's all types of animals. And it's all about finding a therapeutic goal and using that animal as a tool or a vehicle to actually solve that goal or be there.
So, Chuck, I think a lot of people think primarily that, well, dogs have this amazing sense of smell. And, you know, compared to humans, it's like an order of magnitude different. But using that sense of smell has been very helpful in diagnosing certain kinds of conditions or alerting humans. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's certain types of cancers that animals can, not just dogs, but, you know, other animals can detect. Diabetics, if their blood sugar goes up, they spill, you know, glucose in their urine, the dogs can detect that. They can also they can tell when someone's going to before they're going to have a seizure. So I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I mean, we've known about this for many, many years.
Well, Chuck mentioned diabetics, and we have an email from Carrie. She writes, "My cat sitter friend is a type 1 diabetic who wears an insulin pump. More than once, the cats in her care have awakened when her blood sugar was getting dangerously low. They may have saved her life."
I'm sure.
888-472-3366 is the number to call if you'd like to share your experience with animal companions. You can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. That number again, 888-472-3366. And Kevlin, I'd like to ask you about the Duke program that you coordinate. What do the dogs and their handlers do?
Yes. So Pets at Duke is our animal-assisted intervention program. We primarily use dogs. We are part of our Duke Cancer Patient Support Program. And that program was founded in 1989 to pretty much just assess the needs of patients as a whole, not just the disease of cancer. And one of the ways we did that is by therapy with our dogs. And so the teams are all volunteer, and they all come in with their dogs, and they come in and they sit down with the patients. They do one-on-one, and it just, allow the patient to forget their troubles, forget what they're doing, distract from their pain, distract from this. We focus on the emotional and social benefits mainly at Pets at Duke here at Duke University Hospital. But there's many other benefits as well. But we mainly focus on emotional and social. A lot of them love to tell us stories about their pets, how they interacted, even if they don't have one they saw in their childhood. It recalls memories. And these conversations go with the nurses and staff that even down the days later are still having conversations because the dog visited. So it's pretty powerful.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk with Mark in Rockingham, North Carolina, about his service dog. Mark, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Hi. So good to talk with you. My story is that I'm a blind individual, had perfect health and perfect sight until 98, had an illness that left me in a coma and blind. But we recovered from that. And
Mark, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Would you hold the line? We have a break that's coming up that we cannot avoid. So we're going to come back to Mark right after the break, and you can join the conversation too. 888-472-3366. If the lines are full, just email us. We're at radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. March is National Nutrition Month. How could Cocovia's cocoa flavanols be a part of your nutrition routine? More information at cocovia.com.
Today, we're talking about how animals affect our health. Our guests are Dr. Chuck Miller of Triangle Veterinary Hospital in Durham, North Carolina. His website is trianglevet.com.
And we are also talking with Kevlyn Swetson, RVT. In her role as coordinator of the Pets at Duke program, Kevlyn ensures that therapy dog teams provide patients with vital companionship, develop and maintain physical function, emotional support, and are a welcome distraction throughout their time at Duke.
We invite you to ask a question or share your story at 888-472-3366. You can also send us an email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. 888-472-3366 is the number that Mark called just before the break. And now we're going to talk more to Mark.
Mark, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, thank you for your patience. We apologize for that. We just were so caught up, we lost track of time. So could you go back and tell your story again?
Sure. I lost my sight in 98 due to an illness. And in 2000, I had a heart transplant at Duke. And after recovering from that, I got my first seeing eye dog, and I've been working seeing eye dogs since then. They provided sight so I can walk, and I feel certain that they've certainly helped with the success of the heart transplant as I go out and walk the dog a mile or two daily. And they were eager to do it in the wind and the rain and anything. And they have just been such a benefit in addition to the companionship. You know, when you're blind, no one ever comes up to you and says, "My, what a cute cane you have." But the dog also provides the social aspect. And I had appendicitis when I was in school and went to Duke for a week with my golden retriever that I had at the time. And she stayed under the bed, and no one ever knew she was there until housekeeping came in. And the lady peeked on her and said, "Oh, a dog." But it's not for the social aspect, but they provide that. And he's just, the one I have now has just been such a wonderful dog and companion and provides sight where I don't have it. I do have to know where I want to go, but it's just wonderful.
Mark, thanks so much for that call. And I think that, seeing eye dogs, guide dogs, are the prototype of service animals. Kevlyn, what other sorts of service animals have you seen?
So the mainly service animals are the dog ones. There are service animals, I believe, that can also be miniature horses. It's the other main one that you hear about. With me, it's therapy dogs is what I specialize in. Is different than a service animal. A therapy is different than a service animal, so definitely want to make sure say that. But they definitely have both benefits, where a service animal has a specific job, and so does a therapy. We focus more on the social, emotional, but we do help with the physical sometimes too. For example, at our hospital, we have many patients that are nervous or are scared to the next step in their care. They might have to sit in a chair and they're worried that it might hurt. They're worried that they might not do it and then they fail. So we bring a dog in and they're like, "Oh, I didn't realize I've been sitting in this chair for 10 minutes already." Like the dog just helps them get through that fear, that fight or flight mode. And, or we have patients that don't want to do their physical therapy. And we're like, "Oh, but would you like to walk a dog?" And they're like, "Well, yeah, why would I want to walk a dog?" And, you see these especially our pediatric patients walking a dog down the hall and they don't even realize they're doing their therapy. So absolutely.
We have a question for Dr. Miller. And this one comes from Jeff. Jeff says, "It seems there was a surge in pet ownership during COVID. In our household, we brought in two brother mini poodles. They've been a wonderful addition during this time of high stress and some, you know, missing human.
I can read it.
Oh,
some
good.
Some of the missing human connection that happened during that time the dogs took up that slack. What has Dr. Miller seen in his practice with this influx of pets, and how has he observed the impact of these pets in the community he serves? And that was Jeff from Chapel Hill.
Jeff, yeah, that's a great story. We too saw just a tremendous influx in pets during the pandemic, during the year of the pandemic. And I can say that I've really not ever seen a time or lived in a time where we need animals more than now. The emotional stress that people seem to be living with every day. It's just overwhelming. And the impact that these animals have had on these people's lives, not just dogs, cats, horses, like Kevlin was saying. Monkeys are even used as service animals in some respects, but reptiles, amphibians, even people that can't afford to own animals volunteer with rescue organizations and things, because owning an animal is expensive. I mean, I'll be honest with you. But if people want to be around them, they can find ways. And so it just makes me grin from ear to ear hearing these stories that you guys are sharing with us. And I've had the same experience.
Let's go to Pamela in Fayetteville, West Virginia. Pamela, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Good morning. I have a small farm. I have horses, cows, sheep, and Pyrenees working dogs for the sheep, as well as two house dogs. And I have really become very connected to my sheep. They really, at the end of the day, help me just calm down. I can feel my blood pressure, everything in my body slowing down when I'm around these animals. And I have a lot of Airbnb guests that come to my farm. And so I love to bring the kids there because they have such a great effect on the kids. They're very tame. They're always milling around. The kids love them. And unless the kids are super hyperactive, the sheep will get hyperactive. But if they go in calmly and pet them, then, you know, they're calm animals. And when I go in, it's almost like my daily meditation. In the morning and the evening, I go in, look at my sheep, pet them, and I can just feel my blood pressure dropping.
Pamela, thanks for that.
Let's go to Bill in Fort Worth, Texas. Terry, he has a very interesting question that I think a lot of people in hospitals worry about. Bill, what's on your mind?
Hi, yeah, I have a question, but listening to your program, I also have a comment. I just realized I'm my wife's service animal.
Okay.
I hope she treats you well.
She does. Anyway, my question was, my daughter and I have this friendly debate all the time about animals, and I contend that they bring in a lot of bacteria and viruses and ticks and fleas and then on the other hand, you hear how, you know, it's good to be around animals because they build your immune system. So I wondered what your guests thought.
Well, let's start with Kevlin first, because I suspect that you have a bunch of infectious disease experts at Duke Health, and they are like, what are you doing bringing all these animals, these dogs? They have everything that Bill's talking about. And then on the other hand, there you are saying, but they offer so much for our patients. What about this question?
No, thank you. Absolutely. This is a big question. So we have, I'll tie it with one of our questions we get all the time. Why can't I just bring my dog off the street? They're wonderful. They love people. They'll be great for a therapy dog. And a lot of people don't realize that there is a lot that goes into this program. And one of them is working with our infection prevention team. We make sure all our dogs that come on our units have a strict bathing protocol. They have a strict veterinary protocol. We have the veterinarians like Dr. Miller here that sign off that A, behaviorally they're great, but also health-wise. We check with them before every shift. They have to go through a health screening to make sure they're healthy, because if they're not healthy, we don't want to bring them on. We also we tie everything together just to make sure our patients are safe. But there are areas in our hospital that we cannot go to because the patient might not at that time, whatever care is happening, it is not appropriate. So that is a great call out, but there is a lot of things we do at Duke to make sure for safety. We check every day.
What about you, Dr. Miller?
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. And I would add to that animals do have some diseases that can be spread to humans. They're called zoonotic diseases. So I would encourage anyone that lives in a house with children or patients that are undergoing chemotherapy or HIV positive or in some immunocompromised state that they really pull out all stops for biosecurity. I mean, wash your hands before you eat. Wash your hands after you touch the animals. Like Kevlin was saying, you know, have the animals seen by a veterinarian, vaccinated for things that people could get, like leptospirosis. Have routine fecal exams done on them because some of the internal parasites are also zoonotic. So it is important. I mean, a lot of us sleep with our animals. We are in close contact with them all the time. And I love that. But there does need to be a degree of concern.
So, Bill, does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, I think I'm going to tell my daughter that I won the debate.
Well,
I'm not sure it's quite so clear, Bill.
I wouldn't go that far. I think what you're hearing is that when dogs, cats, or any other animal for that matter is under good veterinary care and you are practicing good hygiene, that you can do just fine. So maybe you both won. Okay. And thanks so much for the call, Bill. Bye-bye.
I actually found a research article, because I was looking to see what kinds of research there might be for this show, suggesting that people who are dog owners have a better microbiome balance in general than people who are deprived of animals. So I can't tell you where it was published, unfortunately.
I see Dr. Miller nodding his head.
Yeah, I think that is true. And there are possibly a lot of reasons for that. For example, just your overall health, the one medicine approach, how it affects your mental well-being, you know, so you're able to develop a healthy body and have a healthy microbiome.
Tell us more about One Medicine, please.
So One Medicine, you know, it's the catchphrase kind of the past 15 years or so, but it involves humans, public health, animals, and the environment, and how, you know, I like to think of as those three things, environment, animals, and humans, and how each of those impact all of that. And so, yeah, just, you know, things like I say, the One Health as far as living with an animal, having neurotransmitters that are released when you're around animals, oxytocin, the happy neurotransmitter. We know there's, like Terry said, there's many studies that have addressed all of these things. So, you know, people decreasing their blood pressure, people being less likely to die from heart attacks if they're around animals. There was a study or a survey that was done by the American Psychiatric Association back in 2023 with 2,200 respondents that, you know, there was a lot of data that came out of it, but the things that I thought were pretty interesting is that 69% of respondents reported reduced stress and anxiety, and 69 percent responded that they have unconditional love and support from these animals, and 69% really treasure their companionship, and 66% report a calming presence for them, and even 63% of the respondents consider these their pets as true friends. And so that just makes us healthier. You know, I mean, imagine being in a relationship with a good friend and how that makes you feel. And
well, you know, we hear so much about how important exercise is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people go, well, it's raining outside. It's not a nice day. It's a little cool. But if the dog needs to go for a walk, you're going to go out there and you're going to exercise.
Absolutely.
So it's not just the companionship, it's also the physical activity. Let me share an email we received. My husband and I are 78, married in 1980, blending two families, totaling four kids and three cats. We added two dogs, then two cats had kittens. But now we have two dogs, one with neuromuscular disease, not being able to walk. He has his own radio flyer wagon. The other dog moved in from our next door neighbor in 2018. We also have eight rescued cats, two wobbly cat syndrome, whatever that is, cerebellar hypoplasia. You can explain that. And I can't read the rest. But thank you very much for that call. It sounds like the
animals have overtaken their lives. No question about it, especially with these handicapped animals.
And enriched their lives.
Absolutely.
I think that's the other thing.
Yes, for sure. My kind of people, I can tell you. And yes, I'm familiar with the disease states that she was
what
talking
about. What is that disease?
The cerebellar hypoplasia. So the back part of the brain is the cerebellum, and it is involved in fine motor control. And so some of these, there's a subset of cats that are born with a hypoplastic cerebellum, if you will, or a
not
smaller,
quite enough.
Not quite enough. And so we see them usually have intention tremor. So when they go to eat out of a bowl, their head will be bobbling around, and they're cute. Well, it doesn't bother the cats, you know, as long as they can eat and drink. They're cute to watch, but that's what the condition is.
Well, we are getting close to a break, so let us remind you that our lines are open. The number is 888-472-3366. You can send us email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. And when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about what we need to do to keep our pets healthy. That's important, too.
In our studio, Dr. Chuck Miller of Triangle Veterinary Hospital in Durham, North Carolina. His website is trianglevet.com. We also have Kevlyn Swepston. She is coordinator of the Pets at Duke program, which ensures that therapy dog teams provide patients with vital companionship. We'd love to hear from you. Again, our lines are open at 888-472-3366, and you can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Thank you. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. March is National Nutrition Month. How could Cocovia's cocoa flavanols be part of your nutrition routine? More information at cocovia.com.
Today in The People's Pharmacy, we're talking about how animals can affect our health. We have guests here in the studio to address this topic. Kevlin Swepston is a registered veterinary technician and coordinator of Oncology Volunteer Services and Pets at Duke.
Dr. Chuck Miller of Triangle Veterinary Hospital in Durham, North Carolina, is also standing by.
Our lines are open for you at 888-472-3366. If the lines are full, you can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
And let's go to Dallas, Texas, and talk with Karen. What's on your mind?
Hi. Dogs and cats and horses are wonderful. I've had them all my life. But I want to mention that if you can't afford something so big or your space is limited, rats make great pets for first-time pet owners.
Oh, whoa, children. Whoa, wait a minute, Karen.
Rats. Yes, white rats.
Yeah. They're very trainable, they're very loving, and if you don't like them, they die in 2 years anyway.
What about rats, Dr. Chuck Miller?
Karen, I agree 100%. If you quiz anyone that's been in the veterinary profession at all, 100% of people will agree with you that rats make great pets. They're very social. They're like little dogs. I love them. And I've had the opportunity to take care of many throughout the years, and they're just
I will speak up for mice as well. Mice can have a lot of personality, and I tell you this from personal experience. The mice I acquired in high school started as a science fair project, but they did become pets. My dad was pretty good with me doing the science fair project, and he didn't figure that anyone could get attached to a mouse. He was wrong.
Well, I never thought of rats as little dogs, but okay.
Unbelievable.
Well, thank you. Karen, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. And Terry, let's go to Sarasota, Florida.
Kathy, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Hello, my name's Kathy. I just wanted to say I was a bad guy at one point. I brought in 300,000 pounds of pot, and I was part of the cartel in Colombia. And, I got arrested, and they put me on lithium. But when I got out, I had all these animals, and I went off the lithium, and the animals helped me. I have 9 parrots and 3 dogs, and I was able to have a child at 45 that is becoming a doctor. She graduated in biochemistry at the top of the Naval Academy.
Wow.
So I turned my life around with the help of the dogs. Yes, she's going to be an orthopedic surgeon. She was also one of their fastest swimmers. So everything went different when I had the animals. And the minute I got out, you know, I met my husband at age 42. We had this child. But the Colombian cartel. I'm related to the Ochoas, and I reformed. I'm a patriotic American, and I love America. But you credit the animals,
and
yes,
especially
I was on the wrong path.
Well,
listen,
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your story with us, Kathy. And I love parrots.
Yes.
Tell us about birds.
Yes. Yeah, so they're a very popular pet in America. Most people, you know, think of parrots, macaws. Well, they're all parrots, but citizens. But macaws, cockatiels, cockatoos, all the pretty birds. But they bond incredibly well with the people that they live with. In fact, some bond so tightly with them that you can't leave them alone, or they'll feather pick, or they'll undergo, you know, pretty severe emotional distress. But the bond with people and their birds, it's
Well, we do have an email from Barbara who says, you mentioned dogs and cats and fish and other pets, but don't forget about birds, especially budgies.
Yes.
They're cute and smart and sociable, and they qualify as emotional support animals.
Yes, and I've actually had birds myself, and I can attest to how close you can get to them. My ex-mother-in-law fell in love with a budgie that I had, and when he died, she had him stuffed, and still to this day has him stuffed in her house because she loved him so much. So, yes.
Let's go to Radiant, Virginia, and talk to Kate.
Hello.
Hi, Kate.
This is Kate.
What's up?
First of all, I definitely want to agree with the woman about the rats. I had a rat in college. He was Lloyd the French Rat, and he was just so much fun. Anyway, what I really wanted to call it about was a study that I read about where they had horses and riders, and they had heart rate monitors on them, and they told the riders something scary was going to happen at one particular place, and they found that even the horses' heart rates went up. And nothing scary actually ever happened, but just telling the riders it was going to happen, the amount of anxiety they had, the horses picked up on. And I just think it's such an amazing indication of how in tune horses are to human emotions and our state of being, that they're just really incredible animals.
Thanks
for that, Kate.
So much, Kate. Kevlin, I would really like to know how animals make a difference, especially on an oncology ward. I mean, that is one of the areas that you have had a lot of experience with. Can you give us some insight, maybe share a story?
Yeah. So they definitely made a huge difference. I can tell you the staff actually camp out because they know what day we're coming and which dog's coming and everything. So it's definitely a big impact. Like I've always said, the emotional and social is what we have with oncology mainly. But Pets That Do does branch out to other areas in the hospital too, not just oncology, even though it is our primary. And there, one of the biggest things we see is reduce depression, reduced anxiety and stress. And that is one of our main goals. And those are the impacts and benefits that we're seeing with our oncology patients.
You know, I think that's so important because for some people, going into the hospital is a really scary experience. And having, you know, a support animal there can make such a difference.
Yeah, one of the cool areas that we're actually working with, we're working with Dr. Barker in our pediatric echo lab, and they're actually doing a research study right now, and the Pets That Do program is part of that. And what they are finding is that with our pediatric patients, we're doing a study where a dog is in the room with them while they're getting a scan of their heart, the echo done, and we're finding that what is the impact of that? Is it helping? Is it not? Just like, you know, sometimes they use music or they use, games or whatever. And we're finding a huge benefit of having the dog in there because we're getting the test done quicker. We're not having to repeat it. The child doesn't have to be sedated, which, you know, is also emotional and stressful. And even one of the coolest things we realized, we were doing it with even infants. And we're like, the child, you know, pediatric patient is, you know, how does it affect them? Well, it affected the parents. And the parents were decreasing their blood pressure. Their anxiety was going down. And then the infant was feeding off them. And just by having the dog in there, it just shows that, you know, we're doing research right now to prove it, you know.
That's great. And there has been a study published recently in March of 2024 in the European Journal of Pediatric Dentistry, dog-assisted therapy for management of anxiety during pediatric dental care. And what they found is the dogs help.
Yeah. Here's this lovely email from Tom. He says, while walking the neighborhood and scratching the ears of neighborhood dogs, I spread and enjoy the benefits of canine love without the associated costs. And there's a way to enjoy without having to go see the veterinarian. Thank you for that, Tom.
Let's talk with Elizabeth in Boonesboro, Maryland. Elizabeth, welcome to the People's Pharmacy.
Yes, good morning. I'm sorry, hello. I'm a child of World War II. I come from East Prussia, which is today on the Lithuanian border. We ended up throughout the war in the city Cuxhaven near Hamburg, and we were placed into people's homes. And I think, in retrospect, I thought often about it, that the attached to the house in the north are the bounds, and there was a bound attached to the house, and then we had to go to the toilet, we had to go in the bound, and she had cows, she had pigs, she had chicken, and we kind of played with them, actually, and saw them. When the calf was born, we saw the how it was being fed. And then across the street was a farmer, and we helped him take his cows from one meadow to the other. And when I look at it today, and even much earlier, I thought that really what gave us joy and peace. We had no choice. You know, we had, as I said, we had lost everything, and yet we were very, very rich. And what I really looked forward to, the barn doors opened in the morning, and in spring, at this time of year, the swallows would come, and the swallows would build their nest in the barn on a beam. And we could see the little young ones being born and being fed. And it was such richness, actually, in our life, even though we were financially very poor.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for sharing that memory.
Thank you for that. And it just shows how powerful these relationships can be with animals. In times of distress, whether it's in the hospital or in this case as a refugee, we really appreciate that call. I do have a very mundane question for you, Dr. Miller. Treats. Everybody loves to give animals treats. And of course, animals love treats.
Yes, that's part of the problem. So do you have guidelines for us on how to treat your animals, especially dogs, I think, are more susceptible even than cats to overdoing it on treats and convincing their people that they need more treats than are actually good for them?
Well, yes, do what I do, not do what I say, not what I do, because I'm also guilty of that. But so one thing that people don't really take into account is the number of calories. Well, first of all, they need to be treats that the animals can eat. If they have allergies, you would want to pick something that, you know,
right, and it should be a dog-appropriate treat rather than something that we're eating.
That's right, and it should be that. But think about the caloric density of the treat. So if you've got a 10-pound poodle and you're a 150-pound person and you're giving them what would the amount that would be appropriate for you to eat, it doesn't take long before the 10-pound poodle becomes a 15-pound poodle. So, you know, you need to think about how much you're giving them. And also, I would do a little deep dive into, you know, investigating what some foods can be toxic. Things that you would think would be okay, like raisins or grapes, can cause renal failure.
Very dangerous for dogs,
very
I understand.
Very dangerous. Chocolates, you know, things like garlic and onions can cause problems with red blood cells. So, yeah, just do a little research before you give your dog your treats.
Let's go back to the phones. We have just one last call. It's Mary. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Mary. What's this about rabbits?
Okay, hello. I have rabbits, and I'm having, well, I found a few vets that will treat them, but not all vets will take them because they're considered exotic animals. And I'm wondering why veterinarians don't get more involved with rabbits.
Well, Mary,
I would think that the rats and the mice fall under that
category too. They might.
Well, why not rabbits, Dr. Miller? I love rabbits.
And I love rabbits too, and I've had them. And Mary, congratulations on your rabbits. So one of the issues that we as veterinarians face are the different physiologic you know, pathways that certain animals have. We study comparative anatomy. And so a lot of veterinarians, after they get out of veterinary school, haven't really taken care of rabbits, and they don't have expertise with them. So it may not be good for the rabbit to be treated by someone that doesn't have experience with rabbits. Their gastrointestinal systems are different. So I would encourage you to look for someone. I call that standard of care. But I would look for someone in your area that does have experience with exotic animals. Now, if you live in somewhere in Montana where there's one veterinarian every 100 miles, you may be stuck with using someone just to help take care of your animal. But I think that that's probably what you're running up against.
But rabbits are wonderful.
They are. They're great, great, great
and
pets.
I don't think of rabbits as exotic. I think of snakes, like mm-hmm. the one in your office,
yes,
as exotic.
He's pretty exotic.
Just about out of time, Kevlin. In the minute we have left, if someone wants to have some animal contact at Duke or at any hospital for that matter, what do they need to do?
That's a good question. So like I mentioned before, unfortunately, we cannot go to everyone that is in Duke. There are certain areas that we cannot go to. Definitely talking to their medical provider, their medical team, should know how to reach out to if there is a pet program. Or, you know, encourage you when you do leave, talk to your veterinarian or nearby veterinarian about what pet would be appropriate. Your medical team can assure you what pets would be appropriate for your care.
And I'm assuming that at a place like Duke, if there's a child, for example, who's going through chemotherapy and is feeling overwhelmed by that situation, that parents can check and see if there are some programs that they could get involved with to help them through that.
Absolutely. We have wonderful staff, especially on our pediatric floors. We've been with pediatric long-term here with the Pets of Duke program, and they can get you in contact with resources within the hospital, but with outside the hospital as well.
Well, I think that is all the time we have today. And I will mention that March 23rd is National Puppy Day, according to the calendar that we have from the Guiding Eyes. It's a dog organization. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing your stories.
The People's Pharmacy is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with The People's Pharmacy.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Pamela Alberta and Ayasi Chinflu provided technical assistance. Al Wadarski engineered. The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
And thanks to our guest today, Dr. Chuck Miller, owner of Triangle Veterinary Hospital in Durham, North Carolina.
Thanks also to Kevlin Swepston, a registered veterinary technician who coordinates oncology volunteer services and pets at Duke.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. March is National Nutrition Month. How could Cocovia's cocoa flavanols be a part of your nutrition routine? More information at cocovia.com.
Today's show is number 1,379. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. You could subscribe to our podcast through your favorite podcast provider or find it on our website on Monday morning. That's where you can share your thoughts about the show and share additional stories about your interactions with animals. You can email us, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
If you go to peoplespharmacy.com, you could sign up for our free online newsletter. It's an easy way to stay on top of the breaking health news. By subscribing to our newsletter, you'll also get regular access to our weekly podcast and find out ahead of time which topics we'll be covering. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week.